Welcome to Geek Culture Online. I'm your host, Patrick Boland, and we're continuing our MCU run of movies. This is going to be the 10th one in the batch. This is the beginning of phase two. No, the second one in phase two.
Third one
in phase two. It's so hard to keep track of these. We're going to kind of... there's no housekeeping or anything.
Fourth one in phase two.
Fourth one?
Deep into phase two.
There's no housekeeping or anything to worry about or anything like this. This one is a great big departure from Marvel because, you know, up till now they've established the Marvel Universe. This is the Marvel Cosmic Universe. This is another team, and right out of the gate, they started with a team, kind of like backwards from the Avengers, where they did all these solo stories, then the team adventure. This one, they started with the team adventure. Before we started recording, a lot of things were brought up, especially where these characters came from. Oh, and I'm here with my two co-hosts, Larry and Ethan.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, awesome. And now...
But let's... Okay, let me just jump in, though. Since I didn't read the comics, the Guardians of the Galaxy as a movie was my first... exposure
to the
Guardians of the Galaxy cosmic universe. So you're saying about doing individual characters. First of all, you're gonna do a movie on Groot? I guess you could, or a movie on Star Lord. I guess you could, but I think that's just too much.
It would have been playing the real long game,
right?
Turn your mic a little bit towards you. There you go.
Yeah.
Now the thing is that Ethan was brought up is that this was. Very interesting is that all these characters that we know from the movie came out after the introduction of the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right. So the original comic, original Guardians of the Galaxy comic was introduced in 1969 with a completely different set of characters.
An entirely different set of characters, which we saw at the end of Guardians 2, but we'll go into that when Guardians 2.
When we get to Guardians 2, yeah.
And the characters in this film... were introduced in over a number of different years. The earliest being Groot was introduced in 1960, and then the latest characters were introduced in 1976. So they all have been around for decades
in different books,
and as well as in the Guardians books.
Yes, and it's interesting is that this is kind of like the fourth fifth iteration of the Guardians of the Galaxy. So it's interesting that they went back there and pulled all these. Classical characters from different time periods of Marvel, put them together in this iteration, which I believe that was in the early 90s, and then they decided to use this team, and so like the original one, to introduce the world to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, again, I mean, if I could be, stereotypical and thinking how like a Hollywood person would, you have the male lead, Star-Lord, mm-hmm. you have a female lead, Gamora, mm-hmm. there's some love interest possibly, Gamora, Star-Lord. Mm-hmm. Then you have like the big tough guy, Drax.
Kind of like the equivalency of the Hulk for the Avengers.
Something like that. Sure. If you want to go that, right? Then you have, you have the comic relief, which is Rocket. Mm-hmm. But he's also...
the tech genius.
Exactly. So you have like the bomb maker. That's mm-hmm. right. And then you have the muscle. As Groot is described... by on Xandar that he's the supposed
he's Rocket's muscle.
When I first heard that, I'm like, he's a tree, how can he be muscle? But then once you see what he does, yeah, he's the muscle, there's no question about it. Especially when they're on the kiln, they're in the prison.
Yes.
Yeah, then you'd understand what they mean by his muscle.
Well, that's now.
So all I'm saying is the compendium of the Guardians, and of course. I mean, obviously, they don't meet Drax until the prison. Mm-hmm. But there's the four of them from Xandar. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of a nice, it's kind of like not a Magnificent Seven, not Akira Kurosawa's, mm-hmm. Seven Samurai, but we're kind of there. You know what I mean? So it's a good trope that, they could have done a Guardians with less people. But I'm saying you have this four, now five people, five characters.
And it's interesting.
It's a nice package.
It is. And the characters they chose is really interesting because I'm so used to the original Guardians because
I'm ignorant of all that. So to me, this is a fresh slate.
Yeah, complete fresh slate. So let's kind of let's kind of do a little bit behind the scenes stuff.
Chris Pratt.
What came from
Parks and Rec.
Right, he was a TV guy.
And that character, he was kind of hefty.
Right.
Yes. He was not the original choice for the role, but he was given the role, and he was given he was given the role 6 months before filming started. And he was told by the director,
James Gunn,
to get in as best shape as you can. And he wanted him so badly in the role. You know, he didn't tell Chris this, but if he didn't get in the shape he wanted, he was going to digitally change his body shape to fit
lovely.
What he wanted it.
But then Pratt lost 60 pounds.
Yes.
To get ready for the role. So.
Yes.
Right now, see, I've only seen Parks and Rec a little bit. I've seen some episodes. I have family members who love it. Remember,
he had a dad's bod.
Okay, but he was also in Jurassic World, which came out before that.
After.
That was after this.
After. Yes.
Jurassic World was after this, yes.
Yeah, he was offered that role in Jurassic World during the filming of this, and so...
That's right, but Jurassic World came out in the theaters in 2012. No?
No. No, this came out first.
I'm off, see.
That's
2015.
2015, oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so the year after. Okay.
So my apologies. Yeah,
anyway.
So from him getting in the shape he did, it's just opened all these doors for him.
Right.
Well, he had a successful TV show. I mean, the Parks and Rec.
He was fantastic. Right.
But he wasn't the lead character.
That is true.
Population.
That's true. Another team cast.
Yeah,
see, he must do well in team cast.
Yeah, and so now how this movie opens is that they have the new Marvel logo. You don't hear the flipping of the pages
correct.
Anymore. It's the new logo type of thing, and it shows Marvel Studios at the bottom
correct.
Of this one.
Yes,
and it jumps right into a music.
Yes.
Well, but before that, before you see the Marvel logo, is the scene where Star-Lord is a child in 1988.
Yes, they introduced his start.
Right. It's a very again talking about being a departure. I mean, yes, it's a very somber beginning. I mean, yes, he's listening to music on his Sony Walkman, but it's a very. It's a very sad scene.
Yeah, he's at the hospital where his mother is dying.
On her deathbed, and she dies.
She kept iterating things, which is brought up in Guardians 2. It's just like, oh, your dad's coming back.
Yes.
I'm waiting for your dad to come back.
Your father was an angel.
No,
right.
Right. She says your grandfather will take care of you until your father comes back.
Right.
She gives him a package and a card.
And, of course, we don't know about this coming back thing, because I said, dad's... in the military or something. I mean, we don't know. I mean,
yeah,
at that point in the movie.
We had no idea.
We get a hint at the end of this movie.
Yes, we do. Yes,
yes
we do. Yes, we do.
Yeah. They kind of bookend it. Because
yes.
He starts off being on Earth and then getting off Earth. And then
saying,
I'm a Terran. No.
Right. So.
The reason I bring that up, too, about that opening scene is one of the things I was thinking about of this being a departure, all the other films up until now have basically... for the most part, have taken place on Earth. I mean, Thor,
yes,
some of it was on Asgard, but it's about him
coming
to Earth,
right?
So in this movie, other than that very opening scene, that's the only time we see Earth, and then
we're gone, we're in another part
of the galaxy.
Well, yeah, the opening scene ends with him being transported
off
of Earth, basically.
Right.
He's gone.
Right, that's it. That's Earth.
And so there was no other Marvel characters, not even like on the TV hospital room.
A very
bleak. Newspapers, nothing.
Right.
No iteration or nothing talking about anybody else.
And not only that, I mean, if you think about it, not only have the previous movies been on Earth and been more Earthbound, they've really been centered around the Avengers. It's been the Avengers and their different solo movies. You know, a couple of Iron Man movies, a couple of Thor movies, a couple of Captain America movies.
Right.
And they've introduced other characters like, you know, War Machine and Falcon and what have you, but they're all still connected
to the
Avengers. Well, specifically to the Avengers.
Yes.
Right.
And here we're going completely different.
Off the ranch. You're off the ranch. You're starting on Earth. You're in a bleak hospital.
And they're having to world build here again. Like
yes,
they've done all the introductory films. They're having to introduce the world, the rules, the characters, the locations,
right.
And all this
stuff. You're truly starting from scratch.
Yes.
Right. So again, Peter, the young, you know, is
Peter
Quill. So again, the mother, the grandfather says, you have a package for Peter and like a wrapped gift, and he puts it in his backpack. And
right.
then she says, you know, hold my hand. He won't take her hand.
Right.
Again, I'm telling you, it's a very difficult scene.
Very hard.
If somebody's told me, you're going to go see a superhero movie, but there's going to be a little boy and the mother's dying of cancer and yet he won't hold her hand. I'm like, you're crazy.
She says she wants to hold his hand one last time.
Right.
Basically, because she knows she's about to go.
Yeah. Right. And he doesn't want, and he refuses to. He refuses to.
Well, yeah, because if he accepts that, then he's accepting that she's dying.
Right.
Then,
no,
so then I've been in that type of situation.
Okay. So, and then it's difficult. Like, right. It's
very, and then he bolts out of the hospital, right, out into the field, and that's where he gets sucked up.
He picks up his Uber, his space Uber.
Yeah, space Uber.
And it just they fade 20 years later.
Right. Well, then they show the logo. They show the Marvel, Marvel's, and then
boom. Does that saying 26 years later, does that mess up the timeline?
I don't know.
That would put the movie in 2014, right, which would have been the year it was released.
Okay. Right. So
1988 plus 26
years. So that's 2014.
That balances. They didn't mess that part up.
No. So yeah. So then as soon as the logo comes, he gets taken up, the Marvel logo comes on, and then you're on Planet Morag.
Hear the awesome soundtrack. You hear the music,
right?
Right.
But they already show the planet. They already show Planet Morag, and they're running credits. It says James Gunn film, Guardians of the Galaxy, and they flash when the music is going.
Abandoned Planet Morag.
Right, abandoned planet.
And throughout the movie, as they go to different planets, there's a graphic telling you the name of the planet and kind of what it is.
Like a little description. Right. Like a little description.
Yeah. So again, world building. They're going like, okay, you guys are, only the fans are going to understand this. Let me get this for everybody else.
So
Morag is there. It's an abandoned planet. You don't even know it's Quill yet because he's got
his oxygen mask or whatever you call it. Or
environmental mask.
Sure, right.
Yeah, so
could be a space alien. I don't know. Again, I don't know the comics. I don't know who this is. I mean, it could be anybody.
Right. We have no idea it's Quill. We just know it's some dude lands on a planet. He pulls out this device, which he points it at the...
Like the rock formations and
the
stuff.
The wreckage of the buildings and stuff. Right. And it recreates what they were.
Right. It shows like the cities, and it shows like pets and children running with parents and stuff.
It's kind of like a historical view of...
Yeah, like a viewfinder. A viewfinder, but with like action and move, because it actually has motion.
Yeah,
it's actually very cool, I thought.
It's like a Google map, three-dimensional thing. And so he's going like, okay, this,
Google Streets.
Google Streets.
Street View.
Yeah. He's like, okay, this was the building, and it's throwing a little wreck there. And it's like, okay.
Right.
Even though this is, wreckage and all this stuff.
Destroyed.
I mean, when he pinpointed, he goes in there, he stumbles across the skeleton that's on a...
Right, like on a stick. Right. Yeah.
And now they're speculating. This is not really, it hasn't been proven or disproven, but that skeleton, they're calling it a carbonite skeleton.
So that's maybe an Easter egg, is what you're saying?
Yeah, may have been an Easter egg, that it may have been like the Beta Ray Bill, which was introduced in later down the road in Thor Ragnarok.
Okay.
Okay, so they're hinting at that.
Okay.
That
that's even an Easter egg in Ragnarok.
Yes.
So, now, are you familiar with who Beta Ray Bill is?
No, I do not.
So he's a character from the Thor comics.
Okay.
Who actually, for a time, took over the hammer.
Ah.
And then when that adventure was over with, and Thor was, got the hammer back, and Beta Ray Bill was still there, Odin went and he says, "You've proven yourself so worthy." And he says, "I don't want to send you away without it." So he had the Dark Elves create his own hammer.
Ah.
So he was sent off back to his world.
Okay.
As that world.
Beta Ray Bill had his own hammer made.
Yes.
Correct.
Interesting.
He's an alien, and he has kind of like a horse-like face.
Very much like
that. Yeah, I don't remember. So this was he was in Ragnarok?
Well,
there was a character that looked like him or appeared to be one of his spirits.
Yeah, because the building had three faces carved into the building.
Okay, that kind
of... one of them was the face of Beta Ray Bill.
Okay. But that's Ragnarok. We'll get to it. So you're saying the skeleton is Star-Lord's walking into...
Correct. It's hinting at that it's from the same species of Beta Ray Bill.
Right.
Okay. Again, they're world building. They're literally building.
And that's good for the people that they're like, oh, it's a skeleton. For the people that don't know, and it's a tip of the hat for the fans that do know. Right. So it was doing two things at once. So this person that's wearing the mask, we don't know who it is, finally finds this chamber.
Right.
He picks the lock, gets in there, and there's nothing else that has power except for this kind of like this Indiana Jones type of...
In fact, I was going to say, the opening scene is has a little bit of the opening scene of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Right.
Yeah. Now, of course, it's a futuristic. It's not just a little chamber. It has a top and a bottom, and it has a force field. Right.
It's floating.
It's a futuristic version, right?
Yeah. So I felt like.
Well, but again, you have the mysterious lone traveler. Right. Mass.
So
it has a feel to that. Again.
And so he uses a device to pull it out of this.
Like a magnetic device.
Yes, and it's an orb that he's picking up.
Yes, right. We have no idea what the orb is.
No.
Yeah.
It's not talked about for a while.
Yeah, we don't even know who he is until he takes his mask off. And you're like, we don't know who it is. And then these other guys do show.
Well, exactly. As soon as he gets the orb out, within a few seconds,
the other guys burst in. And which are working for...
Ronan.
They're working for Ronan.
Like Ronan's goons. Yeah. So yeah.
And so the Ronan's goons, and which he's shown later on in
Ronan is.
Yeah. And those goons show up in Ragnarok. Or no.
No.
No. They're shown earlier in a flashback in another movie.
No, this is the first time we see them in this film.
Right, but later
Now Ronan and then. The character that shows up here, Korath.
Yes, that's it.
They're both going to be in Captain Marvel.
Yes, that's where I saw it, the trailer. Okay. Yes.
So there's of course that great line there, which has become a popular meme online.
Yes.
So when Korath asks him who he is, he says Peter Quill. He's like, but you may know me by my other name, Star Lord. And when he says Star Lord, Korath goes, ooh.
Right.
So there's that's I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a meme online of Korath saying who, and so people will throw that when you're talking about something I'm supposed to know who they are, and you're like, what are you talking about? Who?
Right.
What?
They're not important.
Right.
No.
Star-Lord. Star-Lord.
No.
Who?
And then he manages trickery.
But I was going to say one thing about that. That also kind of works because if you think about it, like we talked about, Guardians was not the biggest, most well-known Marvel title. The characters aren't well-known, so it's kind of it's kind of a play-in too to the audience. Like, well, I'm Star Lord, and he's saying, "Oh, a lot of the audience are probably saying, ooh, Star Lord."
Yeah. Again, like I said, I never read the comics,
never heard of it before.
Until I read. I mean, I read the movie review. It sounded pretty good in the newspaper. I said, "Okay, I want to go see this movie. It's a Marvel movie.
Right.
I'm going to take a chance on it." And remember, I like the space operas. I like the space. I loved all these other Marvel movies. Don't get me wrong. But this one is my sci-fi. So it's Marvel, it's superheroes and sci-fi. That's a great combo for me.
And he gets away, and he takes the orb with him, and
he has a little bit of a fight with Korath and his goons.
And he's got the girl on board, which I love that. He goes, oh, I forgot you're on board.
That you're even here, right.
And if you notice that she was wearing his t-shirt that he
wore. Yes, as a child. Right, the little, he kept it. Right, he's kept everything from his Earth years, basically. Right.
And the music he was listening to, his Walkman that we saw in the opening scene. His Awesome Mix Volume 1.
I want to know how he kept the batteries charged.
That's a very good question. That's a whole other plot, right? So, are there... There's double A batteries in Morag,
or some other technology that allows him to recharge the batteries.
Right, because if I could just make a comment, so later in the movie we could discuss this. When he's talking to Gamora after they escape from the jail, she says, what is this thing? She takes the Walkman. Why would you risk your life for this? And so I'm thinking, because I've seen it twice now last week, the movie, for such a futuristic society or universe or galaxy, they don't know what a listening to music is.
I don't think it's not that they all have headsets.
Yes.
But the idea of something so bulky. It's just like recently I saw this little video of this grandfather showing his teenage grandchildren a rotary phone.
Yes,
and they were given 4 minutes to dial a number.
And they had no clue.
Therefore, extrapolating something like that.
Sure.
Because she's from a high tech society.
Okay.
And she goes, what's
so maybe
this?
Maybe they have headsets that just the music just streams right into the headset.
It seemed like an odd juxtaposition to me that. Maybe they listen, but I mean, of course, they don't show in the movie. But it's not a plot point. This is a plot point.
But also, obviously, it's important to Peter because
to Peter,
of its
yes.
it's his
connection to Earth and his connection to
his mom.
And he's made the mixtape.
Right,
and he's obviously kept So he's kept the Walkman, he's kept the T-shirt, he has a tape player on his ship.
Right, exactly. So a lot of sentimental value, right. Which is fine, right? No, and that's why I like it, because, again, I knew some of these songs, not all of them from the soundtrack. And again, I have the soundtrack, I bought the CD.
I have that soundtrack as an LP, and I play it at home, and my bird dances to some of the music.
And fun fact about the soundtrack, so it did reach number one on the Billboard charts.
And what made that so unusual?
And what made it unusual is it was the first soundtrack with no original music to reach number one on the charts. So any previous soundtracks that went number one, there was always some new hit song that was featured in the movie, or original song
created for the movie
specifically that was tied to it.
And so these were not altered or changed. These are the original tracks, right?
And so the original artists.
And you have to understand, so I saw it with my children at the time, and they were, in their teens. And, a lot of it's 70s music. Some of the songs I know, and it's not bad music, but this is like an introduction. They're going to see a cool Marvel movie with me, whatever. But they saw a cool Marvel movie with cool actors that they know. My daughter was a big Parks and Rec fan, so she loved Chris Pratt, of course. And, other great actors. And, of course, now they get this exposure to this cool music from the 70s, which is something that we didn't really listen to. So, again, the movie kind of expands your horizons in many ways of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the underlying cinematic and universe, and also, the music, like I said, is almost like a standalone character. And it really is.
Because with the character, the music itself played such an important part.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so More so than any other Marvel movie yet.
Yeah, so far.
So far.
Yeah, so it's just, without the music, I don't think it would have played as well, because it harkened back to so many other things, especially the people that grew up with the original Guardians in the 60s and 70s, so that they would have been exposed to that music type of thing . And so now he gets off and goes to Xandar, but let's take a quick break and we'll talk about what happens when he gets to Xandar.
Yes.
There's a cameo on board.
Okay.
So we'll be right back after these messages. And we're back.
Okay, so Xandar.
Before he gets to Xandar, though, remember he talks to Yondu, who's basically his father figure. But Yondu's the one who picked him up from Earth originally. And so then, but he doesn't take the orb to Yondu,
that was his mission.
That was his mission to get the orb and bring it to him. And he decides not to bring it to him. So then Yondu does what? What does he tell his people? He puts a bounty out.
He wants
40,000 units.
And that's important
because
he goes to Xandar because that's where he's to sell.
Xandar is very important in this world building in the cosmic universe because the Nova Corps is on there.
Correct.
It's the home of the Nova Corps.
Right, and they have the peace treaty with the Kree.
Right. And the Kree, Skrull War, and all this stuff. And so they're introducing all of this in there because, the head of the Nova Corps speaks to the head of
the Kree. Right. They're like a teleconference, basically, about the treaty. And
he goes, we signed a treaty and all this stuff. And so there are tensions there.
Already, yes.
And he hangs up on her. Right. And so he goes.
And she calls him prick.
Yeah.
Right.
And he goes to a pawn dealer.
Right. Well, like a high end.
His name is the broker.
The broker, right.
Which is a Marvel character.
Right. Oh, okay.
So he tries to pawn off the orb to him.
Until
it's brought up that Ronan. He's looking for it, and then the broker's like, I don't know.
The guy panics. He drops a shit fit, basically.
Yeah, and kicks him out.
Right. And that's where Gamora,
So just before this, we had seen Ronan
and
Gamora and Nebula.
Right.
So Gamora and Nebula are Thanos' daughters.
Which they are working for.
For Ronan.
For Ronan, right.
Because Ronan basically works for Thanos.
He's contracted out, right? So he wants to send Nebula, but Gamora says, no, I know the planet better. Yeah. Send me. Yeah. And so she goes, so then we go back. Peter gets kicked out of the
broker's
and
business.
Standing there is Gamora
runs into her,
pretending nonchalantly like she wasn't.
He's like, ooh, wow. And he tries to flirt with her, and she takes the orb away. I almost said stone.
Right.
Orb away, because nobody at this point knows what's inside.
No, just an orb, right.
And meanwhile, at the same time, this is all going on. We're introduced to Rocket and Groot, who are also in Xandar.
Right.
And Rocket is using these like
scanning devices. It's like a tablet.
But he's almost using it like his binoculars.
Yeah. Yes, in a way.
To kind of scan around.
It's a see-through tablet.
Because he's a bounty hunter.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's going like, okay, who here is...
worth something, right.
And
then they show, they show
the cameo of
Stan Lee. Right. He's talking to a...
Young lady.
And what's interesting is that they show when he's scanning, they show Stan Lee there. Right. They're doing it in the Skrull language.
Really? Okay. Yes. I didn't catch that.
I didn't catch it either until it was brought up to me. I found that online, and it translates to Excelsior.
Which is Stan Lee's tagline. Right.
His catchphrase. Yeah.
So everybody's speculating, is he a Skrull because they're shapeshifters.
Yes. Because this is also important for Captain Marvel, am I right?
Yes, and for the Fantastic Four.
Sure.
So they can't outright say that he's a Skrull.
Because they didn't have the rights for it. So the device that Rocket was using, you're saying could have been Skrull design?
They're showing. Well, it could have been that.
Could have been Skrull technology.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they show that. So that's interesting.
And then he scans it on Peter.
He's
like, oh, 48,000 credits or units, and he tells Groot, he said, we're about to be rich.
Yes.
Right. And then they try to take him down, and Grimoire is trying to...
It's a crazy fight scene. And again, I don't really remember all of it. So I was thinking, like, how do these guys get to each other? Like, how do they meet up?
That's it.
And that's the crazy fight scene, because they're fighting, they're, you know...
Four out of the five... Guardians of the Galaxy, all in one place,
right? Right, and there's like this outdoor area in Xandar,
and they're basically trying to fight for the orb,
right?
And then at the end of it, who shows up? Nova Corps.
Basically, they're causing a ruckus.
Security comes down, right?
Yeah, we're introduced to Nova Corps. We're introduced to a whole bunch of characters, and it's not 30 minutes into the film, and the foundation's been laid down.
Right, and they're like processed in the jail, and they
which
get
sent. Really hilarious.
Yeah, it is.
There was a scene in there that they bleeped for the movie, but if you watch the DVD, it's unbleeped.
No, that was in the movie, but the trailer they covered it up. They covered up his finger.
Because he gives the Nova Corps the finger,
right.
But in the trailer they bleep it out.
Right.
They put a graphic over it and it says like warning obscene gestures.
Something like that. So they're going to jail.
Yes.
But there's the one Nova Corps member played by John C. Reilly.
Yes.
Who has picked up Quill before, so he knows him.
Right.
And he says, what are you calling yourself now? What was it? What do you call it?
Star Lord. Star Lord.
Yeah, everybody's got a nickname.
Yeah. Right. No. I'm an outlaw.
Lay down more information because every single mugshot, every single character, they give more information about them.
Right.
It's just like.
So it's a good plot device for them to kind of give us some of the background on each of the characters
without having to do any monologues.
Right.
Or long scenes.
Right. And Rocket is 89P13 or something like that. It's like a number or something like that.
He's genetically created.
Correct. The guards are explaining this out loud to themselves.
The character, I forgot his name, played by John C. Reilly, is explaining it to the other guy.
That's right. Which is like a plot device.
Right, and he's saying, this was a P8913 or whatever is Rocket. He's like, and he said, he's a bad character. And then when they introduce Groot, he says that's P9813's
but his muscle. And again, I remember seeing it, like, how could a tree be muscle? But of course, we learn why they say that.
What's interesting is that the first issue that Groot appeared in, which was Tales of Astonish number 60?
I'll look it up. But it was back in 1960.
Which is,
the cover, I do remember the cover, it just shows that invasion from Planet X. And here they say that his home world was X.
Okay. So they're tying some things to the old comics.
The same thing with Rocket's, because Rocket's home world is called Half World, and they say in his mugshot that he came from Half World.
Okay.
They also mention Rocket. So in the comics, he has a love interest named Lila.
Yeah,
They mention her on the screen. It says known associates Groot and
Lila. Yeah, I did pick that up. So
they've lay down an enormous amount of information, right, which they can pick up and use at any time.
Right, because honestly, it's so much that I didn't catch even half of it.
But again, these are more so Easter eggs.
Than yeah, yeah, sure, just, sure. No, I got you.
And they just blaze through them. They didn't freeze frame or stop it or anything. Right. They just dropped it and moved on.
Now, Gamora's mugshot, I think that's really important, right? So, of course, they're talking about how she's a killer. Mm-hmm. She was, you know, of course, she works for Ronan, but she's really Thanos' daughter, related mm-hmm. to Thanos. And then what's her race? I'm saying Zeho, I can't say it. Zehobere? I don't know.
Zehobere?
Yeah.
And it says that she's the last survivor
of that race at right. this time that on the screen, but of course that was changed, obviously.
Right, right, right. But again, at that point. But,
yeah.
But right, and so, you know, we believe that Thanos' favorite daughter, of course, is not his real daughter because they're right, not right. of blood to Thanos.
So then the four of them are taken to this prison planet.
The Kiln.
The Kiln.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then and they're
introduced to
Drax the Destroyer.
Right, right. But not right away.
You not right see, away,
you
see, no.
Right, right. You know, what's the guy that's from Castle and from...
Nathan Fillion.
Nathan Fillion had a cameo.
Fillion. Not Phillips, Fillion.
Fillion. Fillion.
He had a cameo in this...
The blue alien that Groot picks up by the nostrils.
That's Nathan Fillion?
That's him. He does the voice.
Oh, I have to watch it again. It's interesting. Yeah. Okay.
And so they lay down the foundation of Drax the Destroyer.
Yes.
And
yes.
They set all this up. And this is where they introduce how Rocket, how clever, how scientific Gary.
Right. Right.
And also interesting thing, in the beginning as they're walking in, Quill says something about, I'm not going to take that from a raccoon. And he's like, what's a raccoon? He's right. like, well, that's what you are. And he says, no, I'm not. I'm unique. I'm
the only one.
I'm genetically engineered. And he's like, whatever. He's like, I'm a raccoon. Right, exactly. I'm going to argue with you.
I like when he calls him in, was it in Thor Ragnarok or was it in Guardians 2? He goes, Trash Panda.
I think that was in number two. I think it's Guardians 2.
I love that. Yeah.
So, but let me just, I think it's, the whole thing about Groot being the muscle is like, how could a tree? This tree, he's so gentle, he's so nice, he's so kind. Yet, you see after they get showered and they're given like their
he didn't get one.
Right, well, yeah, he's a little big, right? Exactly. Anyway, so then remember, like one guy starts picking on.
What's that blue alien?
Right, the blue alien. Right, he's picking on.
And that's the scene where Groot puts his right.
And he goes, let's just get something straight, Rocket. If you want to, you come through us, right? Yes. More likely, we go through you.
Well, it's because most of the inmates are after Gamora.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Because they know who she is.
Yeah, and she put, she's either killed their families or put right. them in there.
So. Right, exactly, right. And that's what's, and while they're walking in the line, Rocket says, yeah, I know who you are. I know. And of course, Quill doesn't really know who he's. He has no clue. But yeah, he knows. And yeah.
I think even after 26 years, I think Peter would have picked up a few things, but apparently not.
Well, here, but now.
A dumb earthling.
Right. So, but I think talking about Drax, remember, so they put Gamora in her prison cell by herself, and there's like people like pounding on the prison cell.
Right.
Like, we're going to get you, we're going to get you. And then when they all fade away, they look down to the courtyard, and Drax is sitting there staring at her prison, but not doing anything.
He knows who she is. And so,
right. Yes. And nobody's attacking Drax. So nobody's messing with Drax.
That night, he prevents her from being killed, because he wants to kill her herself. Peter stops him and goes like, hey, why don't we, if you give her...
She's betrayed Ronan.
Right.
Well, so he says if you keep her alive, then she can bring you to Ronan. Right, exactly. You can kill Ronan yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So don't kill her. Right.
Because Drax wants to kill her because of Ronan, because Ronan killed his family, his wife and his daughter.
Right. So he wants revenge.
Yeah.
So he wants Ronan and really ultimately Thanos too.
Yeah, correct.
Right. So yeah, up the food chain. So he manages to keep everybody at each from strangling each other, killing each other. Right. But then he gets Rocket to get them out.
Right, because when they're going into the jail, when they're in line, he's like, yeah, no, Rocket's going to do it. He's like, oh yeah, I've broken out 22 prisons. I'll break out of this one. Don't worry. I have a plan. Yeah.
And then, so they do break out, but...
Which is crazy, because I'm thinking, how does a raccoon break out of a prison 22 times? Okay, you got Groot, but still.
Yeah.
He proves it.
And then Nebula shows up, after they're breaking out.
Oh, but one quick thing before they break out of the prison. So we talked about the Walkman earlier. So one of the guards takes the Walkman effect as they're going through to get ready to be processed. He sees the guard listening to it. And he's like, you can't have it. That's my put that down.
And he gets very emotional.
Very emotional. Right, very he has to go back to get the Walkman
right.
from
and,
the guard.
And nobody understands why.
No, nobody right. understands why. And so he has the orb in like his satchel. Mm-hmm. And so you think Gamora has it. And then she checks whether they're on the spaceship waiting for him. She's like, no, we got to wait for him. And then, of course, Drax is in the spaceship, you know, once they break out. And, of course, he's like, oh, look, he's this, like, he will be a great warrior. He'll be a great warrior to fight Batman. Like, he grabs him out. And he goes, and then she goes, did you get it? And or something like that. And he goes, you went back for this? He goes, what an imbecile. It just, the deadpan of Dave Bautista in this movie honestly makes so much
of his. And part of it is playing off of Drax being kind of dense. You
know? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
He doesn't get any. Very literal, yes.
He's very literal. But
like when he talks to him about being able to get Ronin, he does the throat slash when he's like, why would I run my finger on her? So he's like, no, that means cut his throat. I would not cut his throat. I'll cut his head clean off.
Right. And he's like, but doesn't everybody understand this, like the international symbol for cutting your throat? Killing. And like the little guy in the corner says, yeah. And he goes, no. He goes, oh, okay. No. Right. Because again, on Earth, we know that.
And he goes, and he says, my words are going over your head. And he says, I can't catch words.
Right.
So Nebula shows up.
And Nebula shows up and blows the capsule up that has
Gamora
in it, so you think she's dead.
Right, remember, we're off kill now. Now we're in nowhere. We're in the planet nowhere.
Oh, yeah, we go. Well,
yeah, you skipped it, right?
Right. I was thinking that was right after kill.
No.
So first they go to nowhere,
which
is where the collector is.
Right.
Yeah, but it's the skull or the head of
a celestial.
And a celestial.
Right,
and
which means what? Because, I mean, I wasn't really sure what it is.
Celestials are giant, humongously huge beings. You saw this, how big the skull was.
Yes, it's huge.
So they're all that height. They're all that size. They're all powerful.
It's a mining colony. That's what she describes. It's a mining colony.
They're scooping the brains out of the...
Right, the juice and all kinds of like valuables or something.
Yeah, because they're using that illegally across the galaxy. But these, there's 8 or is it 12 celestials known to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
That's another major character for Marvel.
Okay.
And they are from the very beginnings of the universe.
Yes, that was my impression, right? So this is a mining colony.
If we're jumping ahead to Guardians 2,
okay.
Uh-huh.
Quill's father is a celestial.
Celestial, that's right. That's right. Yeah, see. Okay. I didn't see that. Okay. That'll be for another podcast,
So they go to the skull, which is called?
Nowhere.
Nowhere. They just call it Nowhere, right.
And which is, it's been scooped out enough where people are living in there. There's a whole entire colony in there.
Yes.
Except it's kind of like a Wild Western type situation. There's no laws.
It's like the Star Wars cantina on steroids, basically.
Yes. And the collector is hiding there because what does the collector do? He collects everything that's unique in the galaxy.
Right. Very odd
pieces. As we saw in the end of Thor Dark World.
Yes.
They had given him possession of one of the Infinity Stones.
Yes,
and remember the comment he made.
It's one down.
Down five to go. So
he's trying, fully aware of all.
Right now,
he wants to collect all 6.
Well, he is the collector.
He's the collector. Yes.
And what's really interesting is what's in the collection that they breeze. You know, people walk past and everything.
Well, there's the I don't know the name of the dog, but the dog from the Soviet Union.
Cosmo.
Okay, right. So he's there, and he actually is a prominent player. They show him a couple
and
times.
And he's from the comics, because he ends up being the sheriff of the nowhere.
Oh, really? Really? Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
He's sentient. He's got powers, and he's able to communicate, you know,
English. Because in the movie, the dog doesn't bark.
No,
he doesn't talk or anything. Right, right.
But he's wearing his space outfit.
Right.
He wears in the comic book.
Right.
So, and then, they introduce that.
Right, and I'm going to tell you, there's such great performances in this movie. It's a very dense movie. But Benicio del Toro as the collector, when he gets the orb, like his hand motions, because I saw it again, mm-hmm. were just like, I could have never imagined it. It was such a kinetic performance.
Didn't Gunn also direct Slither? Is that correct?
One
of the creatures in one of the cases was the creatures from the movie that he had.
Really?
Yes.
Well, there's a lot of weird stuff.
There's a Chitauri warrior.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of weird things that he has kind of lurking in the back there.
And the cocoon they showed in there, I really thought was going to be Adam Warlock's. But
again, I missed one. Slither was directed by James Gunn.
Yeah, so that there was a case full of Slither creatures.
Okay, so he just throws it in there for a little, his own little Easter egg to himself, basically.
Yes.
So anyway, no, so the key thing is, right, they go to meet, you know, they're killing time. Rocket gets drunk with Drax. That's actually very important, because Drax, so they go to meet the Collector, right?
But
Drax is wandering around, drunk. And he sees, like, drunk, he sees, like a communication pod.
Right.
And he puts a knife to the guy and goes...
Yeah, he summons Ronan.
Right, he calls him. Right,
which is probably the worst mistake he could do.
Absolutely,
because yes. He's never been defeated, so therefore he thinks, oh, I'm undefeated, so I'm going to take care of this.
Right.
So,
because again, he's literal.
Yeah,
very literal,
and very linear.
Yes, right.
And so the orb is brought to the Collector. The Collector has a device that is actually able to unlock it.
Yes,
what do we find inside of it?
One of the Infinity Stones.
And he explains the Infinity Stones.
Yes.
And we see one of the Celestials in the flashback there. And that giant creature that
has
armor and stuff. So mm-hmm. We are introduced to the Celestials. We're introduced to the other stones. So now everybody understands the Infinity Stones.
Right.
Individually, we don't know that at this point they can be used collectively.
Right.
Correct. That is correct.
And what do you do to somebody that you're suppressing and you're torturing and stuff,
right.
And
she's rebelling.
A huge weapon right in front of you.
Right, she rebels. She jumps in and tries to grab it.
His assistant or slave grabs the stone, and
then when she grabs it, it causes this huge explosion.
Right.
She's not super powered.
Exactly. So,
and so they show that normal beings can't wield the stones.
Mm-hmm.
And so it goes off, takes out his entire collection in his household, mansion,
whatever it is.
His archive there.
His archive.
Thank you.
Now, at that point, the stone is still existing. It blows up.
Right, and it's just like floating there.
It's floating, yeah. Okay.
Well, I think they put it back in the orb.
I think Gamora puts it back
in the orb.
Right.
Yeah, because the orb is the only thing that can handle
it. Right, because the device he has separates the orb, mm-hmm. and everything is there like being held by this device. It's like pulling it apart.
She knew better after that not to grab it straight out.
Yeah. So I think Gamora like puts it back together quickly and grabs it
to
get out. It's like her and Peter.
And then who shows up?
That's when Ronan shows up.
Yeah, Ronan lands.
And
Nebula.
Nebula is there, or she's...
No, Nebula's there. Nebula's there.
And so Ronan starts fighting Drax.
Drax gets his ass handed to
him. Well, let's say this. Ronan lands in a ship, but Nebula didn't land. She's still
in
space.
She's chasing Gamora, but they think that she's got the orb.
Right. Exactly.
And, because they got the mining... carts that they're using.
One-person pods, or one-being pods.
Very rugged, because it's a celestial skull, so it's got to be tough.
Right.
So they're using that as weapons. Even though they're not weapons, Gamora escapes nowhere. But who's on her tail?
Nebula. And Nebula shoots her, and she says,
and she destroys her ship.
So. Right. So she's floating in space. We all assume she's dead.
Well, but I thought she was dead too. Do we need any more characters dying?
Right. But then Peter's there like, no, I just couldn't let her die.
And he uses his
helmet.
His helmet, which is it has, even though he's exposed to the to space, it's like an astronaut helmet, basically. And he takes it off, gives it to her.
But before he does that, he says...
He contacts Yondu.
He tells Yondu, here's my coordinates where I'm at, come and get me. Because they're still looking for him.
Yeah.
They're still... They land. Actually, Ronan lands. And while they're running from Ronan, what's his name again? Yondu lands with his party too. Hey, boy! He like yells at him, and they're like, yeah, they're on there too.
So
it's like a melee basically. Everybody's like chasing all of them. So he gives the coordinates.
This should have been a tip of the hat to Quinn's genetic makeup, because he doesn't die.
Well, okay,
but he's only
he's briefly out there.
He's right? only briefly there.
Right. Jared
Young
so,
gets him.
Right.
Yeah. Gets both of them.
Yeah. Right. And so rescues both. Rescues both. Ship, and they finally arrive at a agreement.
Yes. Let's say an agreement.
Yeah. Saying that we. Says why don't we? You know.
Well, Gamora steps in. Gamora says, "Look, look. You know, no. Okay." Peter says, "Look. You know, she knows how to get this ore back. It'll be the greatest score of your life. I mean, this is more money you can imagine, basically.
From
getting back from Ronan.
Ronan's got it.
Right. Ronan stole it when the ship explodes. He took it up to the Dark Aster.
Yeah.
So now they have to figure out how to get it back because they still want the money, which is like 4 billion units or something.
Yes.
Some crazy amount of money, right? So."
Four billion.
Yeah. So Peter. So Peter says, "Look. You know, we don't have it, but she knows his." And she goes, "Oh yes, he has weaknesses." She goes, "He has weaknesses." So she sells it. She sells it in like the party.
They all give into it.
Well, yeah, but they go like a little private room where they're all sitting, like rocking. Yeah. And he's like, "Okay, how much of a plan do you have?"
He goes, "I got 12%." 12%.
He's like, "That's not." And he's like, starts laughing. Yeah. And then Groot's like, "And then he's like, I am Groot."
This kind of shows the chemistry that they all have already.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, just they all trust each other at this point. I mean, they have
really
no choice, but
Drax and Gamora really hate each other. But the only reason why they're not killing each other is what Peter says. One, nobody kills anybody on my ship.
Right.
And two, he says, you know, if you want to get to Ronan, you got to keep her alive. She'll get us to Ronan.
Exactly.
And that's his only motivation is because he wants to kill Ronan.
And so they make a plan. They map it out what they're going to do. And because Ronan's big thing is to go to Xandar.
He wants to destroy Xandar.
Right.
Because of the truce between the Kree and Xandar.
Right. And he's going against Thanos' orders. Right? Yes. We do see Thanos in the middle.
Well, yeah, they show how powerful it is because he takes it out of the orb.
And puts it in his
hand.
And he survives it.
Yes.
Right. And, he puts it like into his hammer. Like
his hammer, yes.
Right.
But he survives it, which that other lady didn't. So we know that how powerfully he has to be able to survive one stone. And Thanos sees him do this.
Right.
And then so we know, okay, this guy's on a power level. That's why he was able to defeat.
Right. And remember, he's betraying Thanos' agreement. He was supposed to bring the orb to Thanos, and he says, "No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm going to use."
You know, Thanos at this point should really learn because he tasked Loki to go get a stone.
Right.
Couldn't do it.
Right. And that stone wound up with the Collector.
Yes.
Right.
Thor gives it to the Collector.
No, the one that wound up with the Collector was the one from Dark World. The ether.
Okay, the ether. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. So
yeah.
But that's
the one that Loki has is in Asgard.
Yes.
That's true. It's still
that was the one that was the Tesseract.
It's still in Asgard.
Yeah, the Tesseract.
Right.
Which,
okay, but one stone gets the Collector buys.
Yeah.
So now the second one, you know, went to the Collector. Luckily, they retrieved it because of this woman, you know, blew herself up.
So yeah, Thanos has really got really bad assistance.
Yes.
Think about it. Right. You know, he
needs better executive assistance.
Yes. Right. He needs a better hiring scheme.
Yes.
Salesforce. Yeah. So yeah. So he's going to Xandar.
Right. So he's saying, screw you, Thanos. I mean, he's cut Thanos out of the picture, basically.
So Peter and his gang intercept everybody at Xandar.
Right. They go to Xandar.
The whole entire place collapses to Xandar.
Right.
Yes. The whole movie is now focused on saving Xandar.
Ronan's there. Quill and his group, along with Yondu and all the Rangers,
Ravagers,
are all there.
And the Nova Corps.
Nova Corps is already there.
It's their home planet.
There's a lot of power, power against...
Against Ronan.
Ronan.
Right.
Well,
right.
Yeah, but Ronan he's a supervillain.
Remember, Quill sends a message to Nova Corps.
Oh, yeah, through Riley's character.
So John C. Riley's character, and he says he's sorry for being a dick.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, what's really funny is that his communication device or phone or whatever
shows
his picture, and he had a direct number to him.
Yes.
So that's how often he's been arrested.
Detained. Right. That's right.
So it's just that's how.
It's a close relationship.
Number on speed dial.
Right. Yes, basically.
Too close for comfort.
Right. Now, what's really going to be interesting is what happens to them, and we'll find that out after this break. And we're back. Now, everybody is now on Xander.
Right. Yeah, and that's the final finale battle, the massive battle.
But what happens is Quill's ship basically boards the Dark Aster.
Right.
And he crashes his ship in there.
Right. Rocket shoots a hole into the Dark Aster. The Murano goes into the Dark Aster. Gamora says, I know how to disarm his private chamber. I can get you right to him. And of course, Drax and everybody wants that.
And so, therefore, everybody's trying to keep the ship from landing or getting close enough there, because if he gets to the planet, he's able to put this stone to the surface, and it fries.
Right. The whole planet.
So that's the whole point, is no matter what happens, it can't land.
Right, the Nova Corps deploy their spaceships, and they put like a net. They're trying to stop it from doing.
It's like almost a force, like a force shield.
I really like
that character. He's always like playing the captain, all the BBC stuff. But yeah, I liked him, and I thought, like, why did they have to kill him?
Yeah.
Because I really like to have seen him come back. But it just.
But that shows you the depth of what kind of good cast this movie is. They have such a good cast, and even the secondary and tertiary characters are great actors.
Very rich, and it's just they did a good job. He took this character as far as he could.
Absolutely.
And so.
So they're fighting.
Net's breaking up. Right. You know, the net's broken up. It's destroyed.
Right.
The rocket's tied up, trying to shoot all the ships out of the sky.
Right.
So the Ravers are all that are stuck there, and so they're aboard. They finally get into the chamber.
And you have the Ravagers and Nova Corps kind of working
together
to fight against.
Right. But they get into the private chamber, and they have this plan of like this massive like mortar shot to hit Ronan, and it hits him.
And they're like, ah, we're done.
We're good. And then he gets up again, like a zombie, like, oh, shit. Right. But, you know, that didn't help.
Just brush the dirt off his shoulder.
Right. And then Drax is trying to go nuts against him, and Drax is fighting him. Right, exactly. Doesn't help.
For the second time.
For the second time.
But as Drax is fighting him, for the second time and getting the shit kicked out of him, that's when all of a sudden you see this, holy mother of God, Rocket comes to the rescue, because he basically kamikazes the Dark Aster. He's realizing it's taking too much time. The ship.
He's got to do something.
Yeah, do something. So of course he throws
a whole ship at him.
Literally physically. He at least breaks it up.
The ship to the point where it starts crashing.
It's out of control.
There's nothing they can do. They try to stop it from landing, but now it's broken.
It's going to crash in the middle of Xander.
Right. But again, we don't know. We think maybe Ronan's dead. I mean, he like literally crash lands on top of him and Drax.
Yeah, so he's smushed like a bug on a windshield.
Right, so that's what you think, because you don't see him surviving.
But the whole ship's going down. So what can they do? Everybody's resigned to the fact that
they're going
to
die.
On the ship, but they've done their job.
Right.
And, you know, they've done the Magnificent Seven thing. They've sacrificed themselves. We're done. But Groot has other thoughts.
Right, so Groot basically creates like a bubble around them with his plant, basically his body, and to kind of encapsulate them so that
it's like a natural capsule,
capsule to keep them all protected when it like crashes.
And it's beautiful.
But Rocket noticed, goes like, you can't do this. You'll die.
Because he knows.
Apparently, he's done something like this before.
It sounds like it, right?
So they know the consequences, but then Groot.
But that's really the only way they could survive. Even if you could survive it, because
then Groot says something different than he's never said before.
He says, "We are."
He says, "We are Groot."
Right, exactly, which is very cool.
And then the ship crashes, breaks apart, and everybody's dead. They're
kind of scattered around.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, and then who do we see that we thought was dead? We see Ronan come walking out
out of the smoldering. And you're like, oh my God, here we go again.
What's going to take it to get him?
Right.
I mean, he survived a ship slamming into him. He survived his ship breaking up and hitting the planet. So what's going to take to take him down?
Right. This guy's he's like a Terminator. I mean, he just can't kill him.
And so then what does Quill decide to do to distract Ronan?
Dance off, bro.
Quill challenges him to a dance
off.
He's got nothing left.
Right. He's like, what is this? He's like, what are you doing? He's like, dance off, bro.
because
and he's doing like waving his hands, and he motions to Gamora. She's like, "All right, I'll take it back." And it's like, and like Rhodey is truly perplexed,
you know, because what Rocket was doing was building something behind right. their right. backs.
And exactly.
So he had no more weapons. He had nothing else. So what does he do?
He's the distracted.
He knows what to do.
Dance. And distract. Right.
Which
and
is almost a disco dance.
Right, and then so then the device that the rocket has created enables them to destroy the hammer right. that he's got the stone in,
and it explodes the hammer.
Right,
and the stone's falling, and
so Peter and Rhodey are both reaching for it. Right, and
who gets it first?
Peter
does.
Peter grabs it,
but then of course we've told that he can't hold on to it right. because he's
human. Right, so he's holding it.
He's holding on to it. You see like his body is breaking apart.
His flesh in his cheeks.
He has a flashback to his mom.
Right,
because he thinks like, oh, I'm
dying.
I'm crossing over. But Gamora goes, grab my hand.
And he looks at her and he sees his mother.
Right.
And says, take my hand. And so he grabs her hand.
Which is actually the power.
Right.
So then
Drax and Rocket join in as well.
Right.
And that diffuses even more. There's four bodies, but still, they're burning up.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But
they're surviving. And of course, Rhodey is watching this. I mean, Rhodey is right in front of him.
He goes, how is this possible?
Right. And he says, you said it yourself. We're the Guardians of the Galaxy, bitch. Right.
And then they blast Rhodey.
Right.
The smithereens.
Exactly. So the energy that was escaping or burning them up, they're redirected towards him,
right.
which finally takes them out.
Right. Hence, truly, the Guardians of the Galaxy. Right. And it's a beauty. I mean, the thing with the mom is very tough. You know what I mean? I'm like, right. So I see this. I'm like, oh my God. I go, wait, did he really see that? And it's really Gamora's hand. But then,
I thought like they're going to kill him too. I thought like. First movie out of the gate, and I thought like,
well,
they have all these other Guardians of the Galaxy characters. Maybe they're going to introduce some.
Well, I didn't know. I mean, I just didn't understand. You know, obviously, I just thought he was human. I just thought he was 100% human.
No, everybody did.
Right. But I figured, okay,
they introduced that at the beginning.
Right.
Right.
But by grabbing Gamora's hand, I go, okay, well, they're not dead. So I thought, okay, somehow they're sharing the pain, distributing
energy.
Right.
That's what I thought too. One person can't handle it.
Right, Drax puts his hand on the shoulder, and then Drax puts his finger out, and then Rocket
touches his
finger, and that's how they distribute all the power. So
now everybody's saved. The world is saved.
Right. Xander's saved. They have the Infinity Stone.
And then as a reward for them saving it, the Nova Corps basically expunges all of their records, so they're cleared of all their crimes.
All their crimes.
Right, but remember,
all of them.
But remember,
all five of them.
Correct. Remember, step back for a second. So as soon as Rhodey is defeated, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and then we hear a, all right, boy, that's real good now. Remember, he's there. He's watching this. He says he wants
the stone.
That's what he promised.
And
she's like, no. Gamora's like, no, don't give it. You can't do that. You can't let him sell. He's like, I have to. You know, and of course he gives him another orb
and he goes, you see what happened, don't open
it. Right, don't open it. You can't open it because it's going to destroy you.
So he leaves.
Right.
And
on his ship. Right.
Peter's got the Raiders off his back.
Right.
He's got, save the world.
Right.
And so
Ronan's gone. Yeah, right, exactly.
So he gives the Nova Corps, which what Gamora and he wanted to do in the first place.
Correct.
Was give
the
stone
to the Nova Corps.
Right, for safekeeping.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, and so they lock it up. Supposedly good.
Supposedly, right. But
now keep that in mind.
Right.
Supposedly good. Now, wait for another six podcasts.
Right, okay, right.
Ten more podcasts.
Yeah,
for now,
we know it's locked up.
Yeah. Right. So we'll explain that. So now they go like, okay, when we put you through the process of putting you in your jail, we noticed something abnormal about your DNA. So they explain, it says, you're not fully Terran. They knew about Earth.
Your mother's Terran.
Your mother's Terran,
but your father isn't.
Right. And so
they
that's...
say he's part of some ancient unknown species.
Right. Which, again, now makes sense why he could survive holding
the
Infinity Stone.
Yeah, he diffused it enough that the other ones could survive.
As well.
So now... That foundation's been laid down.
Right. That's where the plot thickens, right?
Yes. So,
right.
And so, as another thank you, they give him another ship.
Yeah,
well, they fixed up his ship. I thought they fixed it up.
They fixed it where they made a replica.
We replaced it, and it was just we fixed it up, and we used as many parts as we could of the old.
Right. They rebuilt it, basically.
Yeah, essence, it's the same. It's an identical ship, yeah.
Except it's not going to be a Jackson Pollock in the inside.
Well, hopefully not. Yeah. Well, fantastic one.
Oh, okay. Repeat that again.
That Jackson Pollock line was an ad lib by Christopher.
And that's a fantastic. It's a funny, crazy line.
That was a hilarious line in there. So
and that's why I love this movie. I mean, obviously, all the other movies have humor. Don't get me wrong. Robert Downey Jr. has humor. Right. Thor movies have humor.
They inhabit the character and they make it their own. So they inject something that's really good personally for those characters, which makes it more relatable.
Right. Now, Gamora is not a funny character in any way, shape, or form. But Star-Lord is funny. But, you know, Rocket is funny, hilarious. Right. Drax is funny on his own level.
Most of his lines were ad-libbed.
Rockets?
Yes. Oh, here's another interesting part is that Rocket is CGI, okay? I used to break the everybody. That's not a real raccoon.
Big surprise. It's not a real raccoon, really?
But,
no?
But
no?
The guy on set that wore the CGI suit is...
James Gunn's brother.
Yes.
Who also plays... He plays one of Yondu's...
Raiders.
Ravagers.
Oh, okay. Oh, Ravagers.
The one,
okay.
the skinny guy.
Oh, yes.
So that's James Gunn's brother, and he was the stand-in, basically, for Rocket on set.
Interesting.
And if you go online, there's some behind-the-scenes stuff where they show before and after, like when Drax is petting Rocket.
Yes, at the very end.
Right. Petting
James Gunn's suit,
and then they show the after scene, and it's really interesting how they do that.
So just to kind of tie up the rest of the story.
Yes. Please.
So, of course, now remember, we think Groot is dead, but we saw at the site of the crash that Rocket finds a big stick, a sapling. And so at the end of the film, when they're on the Milano, on the ship, you see a little baby Groot in a pot.
Yes.
Right.
Sitting
like
in front
a,
of
like a pot of dancing. Plant,
a pot of plant.
Oh,
no, before the dancing. Yeah. Just when they're on the ship.
Yeah, they're actually...
The pot is sitting right in front of Rocket.
Because the after credit scene?
Oh, yeah. We're going to get to that.
All right.
Yeah.
But also the other thing is, remember at the beginning of the movie... Peter is given a gift from his mother.
Right.
So he has had this gift and he hasn't opened it until now.
For 26 years.
Right. So he finally opens it, and what it is it's volume 2 of The Awesome Mix.
Which is
cassette.
Which is like, you think, okay, so we're going to have a sequel for sure. Right. This is the foreshadowing of maybe another sequel.
And so then he says to them, was the line, he says, what are we going to do?
What are we going to do now? He says, well, we can do a little bit of good,
a little bit of bad, or a little bit of both.
Right.
Okay, a little bit of both it is.
Exactly.
And so the music starts of Jackson 5,
yeah.
I Want You Back. There's a little bit of, they show a little bit of the credits. It says, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy will return.
Right.
But then they cut back to, you see Drax sharpening his knife,
right.
And Baby Groot is dancing to the music. And then Drax looks to turn to see what he's doing. And Baby Groot just starts dancing.
Right. So he's like dancing with nobody looking at
him. And as soon as Drax turns back, Baby Groot starts dancing again.
Right.
My kid's favorite part of the movie.
And they actually made an action figure that dances. You're able to get a dancing Groot. You're able to press the button and it dances.
Right.
And there's also just regular Baby Groot.
Yes.
Toys
too. Right. Ironically, the muscle of Rocket the Raccoon is like the most popular merchandising item from the Guardians of the Galaxy.
It's so hilarious.
It is. It's right. It's the most.
That year that they came out, I went to C2E2, and do you know how many Groots I saw?
I'm sure
a ton. I'm sure.
Oh, and they were. You know, they were full size. They were 8 foot tall Groots.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, when I first saw Groot, first of all, I was dumbfounded. But again, what I think of is I think of the end. I think of the end.
We never said who does Groot's voice.
Oh yeah,
Vin Diesel.
Yeah, Vin Diesel. Yeah.
You know, he did 43 different voices. You know, 40 different ways of saying
languages, different languages.
Yeah, languages.
Right.
But he also recorded "I Am Groot" 1,000 different times, with different intonations and inflections.
Yeah, because he says it in a few different ways. But I was going to say, like, you know, when I first saw Groot on screen, again, I was still dumbfounded. But to me, I thought of the Ents from Lord of the Rings. Right.
Sure.
Those are very, I mean, much taller, but that was my little, okay, now I get the character, but still, that the Ents were kind of peace-loving people. This is, this is the muscle. This is the tough guy. Although he was like a teenager.
Yes.
Right?
He's a full-grown.
No, he's
a teenager in the next one.
He's a teenager in the next one.
Because he's a baby here in the studio.
That's right. My mistake, right.
There wasn't another Africa.
Yes, there is.
There is.
Yeah.
So at the very end... There's an after credits scene. We see the collector sitting there in his lair in nowhere. And he's just kind of looking at all the damage.
Right.
And so we see Cosmo the dog running by.
Right. Walks by.
And he lifts still doesn't talk.
Right. His face. And then you hear a line delivered, and they pan kind of around or cut around, and it's Howard the Duck sitting there holding a drink.
Yeah, right. Because he was in the case.
Part of the collection.
Was he? I didn't see. I was looking for that. I didn't notice.
And he goes, and they both sipping apparently the same drink, and he goes, "Oh, it burns going down. This is good, but it burns going down.
Yes.
So, right.
So that's the after credits scene.
So again, help me out, since I'm not a Howard the Duck fan. Why would he collect Howard the Duck, who's because a sentient being?
Well, it's
he wants unique things.
He only wants of a kind type of thing.
Okay. How many talking ducks have you seen?
Never.
Right.
Just this is the only one.
Huey.
Okay.
Other than in cartoons.
Yes.
So that winds up Guardians of the Galaxy, starting the cosmic universe
of the Marvel universe. Right.
Technically, you could say it was Thor, but that's the Nine Realms. That's a little bit different.
And again, like we said earlier, even though part of it takes place on Asgard and other parts of the realms. They still come back to Earth.
Yes.
Right. And much of the story in both of the first two Thor movies take place on Earth.
Yes. Right. Like you
so
said,
Ragnarok, a little different story.
Yes. Right, but like you said, Ethan, this one is 2 minutes, 3 minutes on Earth, and boom, you're nowhere on Earth.
And no mention of any other Marvel superhero.
No.
Right. In fact, only
Nova? Could you see
Tech? Yeah, but Nova's part of this universe, though. Because Nova's part of the Nova Corps. Right.
They're not reaching out to the Thors. Or
right.
To the,
There's no mention of Thor, of Iron Man, Cap, any of those.
No Earth characters.
There's no Earth characters. The only two characters in this that we've seen before, we've seen Collector in that end credit scene from Thor.
Correct.
And Thanos. And that's it.
So
and Thanos is really kind of more in the background here.
Yes.
He's in that one scene where he's talking to Ronan. But other than that, it's more just talking about Thanos.
Yes.
And,
right.
So now they've established this, and all the things we've mentioned, all the worlds they've mentioned, all this stuff they've mentioned. So they've laid down, they've built this world.
Right.
So now we have two established Marvel worlds.
Right. Massive. They built a massive foundation with this movie.
And a ton of Easter eggs. And as we've said before, and I'll reiterate it, is that there's one massive Easter egg that has never been found in this movie.
James Gunn said it still has yet to be identified.
Yes.
But he says it's a massive one.
Massive.
Yeah.
Then I've seen this multiple times, and you know, like all the screens and stuff.
Right.
I've gone to like forums and other.
Okay. So give me a hint. I mean, is it from the? See, if it's from the comic books, I wouldn't know what I'm looking for. I mean, that's my problem.
I would assume it is, but it could be anything.
It could be absolutely anything.
Okay.
Something that ties all the previous movies together.
So,
or something that relates to the upcoming.
Right.
Movies.
So Patrick and Ethan, listeners. If you know or you have an idea what the Easter egg is that we're all missing, tweet us. Send us a Facebook message. Email. We want to know. Because honestly, I just saw the movie twice in the past week. And I have
my 12th time.
Okay, but I'm saying twice in the past week, Patrick. Yeah. I'm just telling you, I have no clue what I'm missing. I mean, trust me, I'm looking for things.
I was freeze framing and going like, no, that's not it.
Right. Listeners, tell us what you think you found, because we'd like to know
you
ourselves.
You can go, like Patrick said, you can go online. There's forums.
Yeah.
There's YouTube videos of people trying to break it down and figure out what it is.
If you
Reddit stuff.
Right.
There's a whole entire Reddit thing about this.
Geek culture listeners, if you have an idea, I would love, I don't know about Ethan or Patrick, I want to know. I want to know what you think it is, because I'm it's killing me now.
Because he says that he will he'll say who's right.
Once they reveal.
Okay, so if you get it right, listeners, then James Gunn will call you out.
They had it before, and he's actually gone out there and went,
yeah, that's no, or that's there, gonna, they've identified some other Easter eggs. He's like, yes, that is one, but that's not the one I'm talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, so
it's there. So next week is going to be
Avengers: Age of Ultron.
Yes,
Age of Ultron. Yes.
Age of Ultron.
So the second Avengers movie.
Yes.
Correct.
So
we're just moving. We're steaming right through.
We're getting closer and closer.
Yeah, closer and closer to Captain Marvel.
Two more films left in Phase 2.
Yes.
Ultron and Ant-Man.
Yes.
Right.
So yeah. So this is going to be exciting, because now they're building. You know,
yes, they're
these going forward are now going to be building on top of each other.
They're literally planned. They planted a lot of seeds with this movie. A lot of stuff.
So all these ones coming up are going to be just implying to things going towards the future. So Well, I want to thank everybody here at Geek Culture Online. You can go to our website, geekculture.online.
We didn't talk about whether we're going to buy it, stream it, or skip it, right?
Is this a buy, stream, or rent? Or skip?
I would say this is my second favorite MCU movie. So yes, I own it. I love it. I can watch it every day.
Mm-hmm. I'd definitely say it's a buy.
I have a buy too. And I bought the LP of the soundtrack.
I have a CD.
And, you know, just one thing we talked about when we got started with this with Iron Man, we talked about how starting the universe off with Iron Man, how that was a gamble because he wasn't, you know, wasn't Spider-Man. They weren't starting off with Hulk or Captain America, who were better known characters. Iron Man was, you know, kind of like a C-list character. Well, if Iron Man's C-list, Guardians were like H-list, L-list.
I heard of Iron Man. There was an Iron Man cartoon. I've never heard of these people in my life. Never.
When they were coming out with all these movies, like year after year after year, Guardians wasn't even on my radar because I was going to like, what's going to be next? What's going to be next? What's going to be next? And then they announced this, and I'm like,
and again, what? And so here is my logic. My logic was, okay, it's 2014. I've seen these Marvel movies. Okay, Avengers. Okay, everybody's together. Like, who the hell are these people? Yeah, I never heard of this before in my life. There's never a cartoon.
And so this was a bit of a risk because up until now they've established kind of a theme to the movies. They're all superhero movies. They have they're all tied into the Avengers and the Shield. And
this is totally in left field. Totally.
This is a complete departure. Yeah. And it's a departure in tone. You were talking earlier about the humor.
Yeah.
Like you think about it, you know, superheroes give little one-liners and quips, but this is more infused with humor.
From the
they use some music too. It uses music much more than the other films.
Heavily.
Yeah. Now, maybe this wasn't really as much of a gamble because if this was a flop, it wouldn't have impacted what they built before because this was
true.
And also, they released this film in August, so they didn't put it in. You know, it wasn't a holidays. You know,
November,
December.
But still, it was still a summer movie.
And by the way, it became the highest grossing August release of all time.
Yes. Interesting.
Because this became a huge hit for them.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I saw it. Twice or three times the movies in that same month within weeks.
But you think about it too, the fact that it didn't necessarily directly tie to those other movies, they're able to draw an audience. Maybe the people who haven't been really following the Marvel movies, you know, somebody who hadn't watched all the other Marvel movies could have gone to see this and just had been up to speed,
right,
just as well as the rest of us.
And the people that weren't interested in Hulk or Iron Man and stuff, now they found something.
Or the sci-fi audience.
Yes.
You
used to talk about like you like space opera.
Right.
You
know? So for me, more of a sci-fi person, but I love the superhero movies. So I'll give you the other demographic was, okay, I've seen many of these Marvel movies. I'm familiar with some of the characters. Now I'm much more familiar with more of them. Mm-hmm. So I'm willing to take a little chance.
Because they've built up a brand. They've built up some capital with their name.
Right, yes. So I'm more comfortable saying, okay, it's a Marvel movie. I've never heard of this in my life.
We've been taught to stay to the very, very last frame of
exactly.
film. Exactly. And also, we've been conditioned now that a Marvel film means it's going to be a good movie. I'm going to have a good time.
I might not know the characters.
But it's going to be something
it'll be entertaining,
enjoyable.
Good popcorn movie. Yeah. Get the soda. Bring the kids.
And it's almost interactive because now people are talking about the movies that have come before. This movie, all the little things in it and what's coming up. And now it's just like, what's next? Now people are, instead of going like, what is this? Now everybody's going, what's next?
Right.
So now, like I said, with this movie, I wasn't sure, but they allowed me to be comfortable and taking the chance. Absolutely. Yes. 100% Disney product. Yes. Yes.
And so if you think about it, 2014, the Marvel releases were Winter Soldier and this film. So two outstanding films.
My 1-2 punch in Marvel movies. Yeah.
I put them both up there. I'd say they're top five, for me
they're my 1-2. Winter Soldier is my number one.
Keep in mind that after we've watched all 22 of them, we're going to rank them.
Sure, we can do that. But that means we have to see Captain Marvel and we have to see Endgame. Yes. So just hang on.
We're going
to
rank them all.
The stack ranking could be changed. That's okay. We'll see.
Well, just think about the ones we've seen so far and how would you rank them? And as we see new ones, where would that fall?
How does that adjust? Yeah. That's okay.
22 films.
That's okay.
Now, you know, just off topic, but on topic, I'm wondering if they're going to do a marathon like they did with Avengers.
But how could they?
Well, it the last one, they cherry-picked. They only did so right. many films.
And then it was over, like, 2 days, wasn't it?
It was 26 hours total over 2 days.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, Infinity War is about three itself, so...
Well,
you know,
yeah.
Black Panther's almost three, am I right?
Right. I mean, they're all 2 hours plus.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Those two are very close to three.
Even though that the Endgame, they just... they've gone back and refilmed things, might add you. It's still, they can't crack it below 3 hours.
Right now it's 3 hours.
It's 3 hours plus.
3 hours.
I'm not shocked by that. So.
Well, it's just, they can't get it down below that. So.
Well, and I think, not to be commercialized to cut you off, but, you know, usually when you go to see like an IMAX, mm-hmm. usually by out here in Chicagoland, you usually get like a 7 p.m. IMAX. And if you do less than 3 hours, you can turn around so you have a 10 o'clock, 10:15 show. But if you can't do that, that really makes it
now
difficult.
You're looking at 10:30 or 11.
Right. Or
or
like midnight,
or you have to make the early show right, 6 or 6:30.
Right. Exactly. So now, I mean, and just from a commercial standpoint.
You know, with Captain Marvel, the tickets went on sale,
yeah.
and they had a 6 p.m. Fan okay. appreciation one. And
right. But that doesn't mean the movie starts at 6. Does it
yeah,
mean the movie starts
yeah.
at 6? Oh, the movie starts at 6. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
so they, I think they're...
Well, the fan appreciation stuff, sometimes they do a little,
they
do a little
video.
Special video beforehand.
Yeah.
Yes, they do. That. So there's going to be like 20 or 30 minutes before the movie starts, so they moved it up a little bit. So maybe, hopefully, they'll...
Do the same for Endgame.
Right.
You know, for Endgame. Now, at this point in time, I don't think the tickets are on sale yet.
For Endgame?
No,
no, they didn't announce it. Captain Marvel. But going back to the marathon, Avengers was 2.5 hours.
Yes,
easy.
It was.
Yes.
So that, let's say it's 2:45. Then Age of Ultron is up there too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another 3 hour thing.
They're all 2+.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So just the Avengers movies,
it's going to be 50+ hours.
Right. Just the Avengers movies, just the three Avengers movies, you can burn a whole day.
Yes.
You know, with little
yes.
bathroom breaks at the theater. You know,
yes.
you could start at 10 a.m. That'd be to 1. Then
well,
let's say break
I,
to
when,
2. To
when I did the Hobbit marathon, it started at 9 a.m.
Right,
and
that's
to midnight.
And that's what they would have to do here too. They have to do like a 10 a.m. or 9 a.m. start. For just Avengers,
was that just Hobbit, or was that also Lord of the Rings too?
It was all six films.
So all three Lord of the Rings and the three Hobbit films.
Yes, the uncut versions.
Okay. Right, which is the crazy. Right? I have. Them.
I survived it.
Right.
Did your platter?
Tweet Patrick. Tweet Patrick. Your stories.
Dialysis, but that's
yes, right. Exactly. He's on dialysis. The machine's here. It's very quiet. It's nice. Patrick's. He's a
trouble one.
He's a trooper. It's good. We like.
Anyway.
It.
So everybody, I want to thank everybody here for listening. You can go to geekculture.online. You can go to our Facebook at geekcultureonline. Go to Instagram at geekcultureonline. Our favorite at Twitter at
yourgeekculture.
You can write to me directly at Patrick at geekcultureonline. You can write to Larry at geekculture.online. You can write to Ethan at geekcultureonline. And keep writing him. He loves the mail. You can go to Apple Podcast and listen to it. You can go to Stitcher and listen to it. You can go Google Podcast and listen to it. You can also listen to it directly at the webpage. Next week is going to be, again, Avengers
Age of
Ultron.
Yes.
And that one's going to be a long one, so expect it to go a little bit longer than normal because they drop a lot of things in that one, too.
It's a busy movie.
Which sets up a lot of things like Civil War and everything else that's coming down the road. It's more of a setup. Then
yes, yeah. There's a storyline to it, but they're foreshadowing a lot. They're foreshadowing a, again. Get ready for that one, ladies
and
gentlemen.
So get ready for a really long one on that one. So I want to thank everybody. I'm Patrick.
I'm Larry.
I'm Ethan.
Have a good one.
Bye bye.